Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I live in a middle-class suburban town in an East Coast state that is extremely anti-drug.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
The fleet of police, especially unmarked undercover cops, as we call them, is absolutely absurd for a relatively crime-free town. Except for pot-smoking kids, that is. There are unmarked police cars of every kind, from brand new Chevy sedans and hatchbacks to brand new Cadillac pickups and SUVs, Dodge Chargers, GMC and Ford SUVs, classic Ford Grand Victorias, Jeep Wranglers, fake taxicabs, and everything you could possibly think of. Because there are so many unmarked police cars in my area, they often get decommissioned and are sold as used cars that still very much look like police cars. A friend of mine even owns a decommissioned Ford Grand Victoria. Last week I was on my way home from a date in an area that I was slightly unfamiliar with around midnight. I was driving along, following the speed limit, and I saw a blatant undercover police car tailgating me in the otherwise deserted road. He follows me for about 5 miles before finally turning on his lights. I was nervous. I had never been pulled over and I was driving past 11 o'clock, not necessarily allowed for minors in my area. Not to mention, I had a small amount of illegal herbs hidden under my spare tire in my trunk. So, knowing my town's extremely harsh police force, I was nervous. Regardless, I pull off the road into an abandoned gas station and I have my papers ready. The policeman approaches my window and he is wearing a police uniform, and I take notice that he's surprisingly good-looking, in his early 20s with longer than most cops' blonde hair. He leans his head uncomfortably far into my small car and asks me where I'm headed and if I know why I was pulled over. I answer and I say no to the question. He smirks and says, "I do," before returning to his car with my license, registration, and proof of insurance. The nearby street light illuminates his unmarked car and I study it in the mirror. He had a civilian license plate, no police badge on it. I also noticed as he walked away that his pants were much too short for him. The bell bottoms awkwardly exposed 6 inches of his ankles. I had a very bad feeling about the whole thing, but I remained in my car. He comes back to my car and asks me to pull around, behind the building of the closed gas station. I say sure, and I turn on my car. But inside of me, the alarm bells are ringing. There was no reason for me to go behind the building, other than to hide our cars from the road. So I roll up my window and I dial 911 as he walks back to his car. I told the operator I was just pulled over by a suspicious police car, and I read her the license plate number. She tells me that it cannot possibly be a police car, and I should get out of there as soon as possible and drive to a public place. So I pull behind the building as instructed, with him following, and I pull my car around the other side of the building. And then I make a break for the road. He turns on his lights and follows. So I'm still on the phone with 911, and my operator isn't giving me any helpful information. I'm trying to win a car chase in my 1994 0-60 in 20 minutes Nissan, crying hysterically. I'm flying down a road that I don't know at 75 miles an hour, faster than I'd ever driven before. And my car begins shaking violently. The policeman keeps a steady trail behind me, lights but not sirens on. My poor car screams and screeches through a red light, and after the turn, I realize I'm on the road that runs through my town. I now know exactly where I am. This road is much more populated, and I have my fingers on the horn. It's a button. And I'm weaving through the angry drivers at 60 on a 40-mile-per-hour road. My only hope is to attract the attention of a real police officer, because I know that they hide on this road to catch speeders. I finally approach an out-of-business diner that sits in front of my neighborhood. I whip into the parking lot because I've never passed that diner without there being a hiding police car. I stop my car and look around desperately. I don't see anyone. I've never felt such a feeling of hopelessness in my life. I thought I was going to die. When I drove into that parking lot, I expected to run into the arms of my hero, but instead I was alone in an abandoned parking lot. The only sounds were the violent protest coming from my engine, and I was sure it wouldn't start again if I tried. I froze. I'm not sure how long I sat there with white knuckles, strangling my steering wheel. I only turned around when I heard a car door slam, and I was sure this was the end. I look at the mirror, expecting the horrible short pants wearing, fake policeman. But instead, I see three marked, real police cars, with five or six policemen exiting, hands on guns, looking concerned. They brought me to the station and took my statement and calmed me down. Apparently the fake police car gave up on the chase when I turned into the parking lot, probably fearing there was a hiding police car there. They praised me for my critical thinking and calling 911, and told me there had been a string of violent rapes, one ending in a girl's death in the neighboring state, all pulled over by a car matching my description. As far as I know, they haven't caught him. This story belongs to my mother, and it's become something of a common warning to teach us how demented some cops could be. My mom was in high school in the 80s. Her parents were divorced, and she lived with her mother and younger brother, my grandmother and uncle. She had a little interaction with her father growing up, and because of this, she developed into something of a rebellious teenager. She smoked a lot of weed and drank, and would sometimes even sneak out to go to parties or to hang out with her friends. Because of this, she snuck out one night to hang out with a group of her friends, and they drank like hell. Eventually, they decided that they wanted to go somewhere else, and at around 12 a.m. or so, they got into their car and drove off. My mom will always stop right here to remind my brother and sister and I to never drink and drive. It must have been pretty obvious that they were drunk, because they were pulled over by a cop. My mom grew up in small-town America, about as stereotypical as you could get. Surrounded by farmland for miles around, and everyone knew everyone, in high school football was the most important thing in the world, maybe outclassed only by our nearby major college teams. The town she grew up in only had about 5,000 people in it. When they were pulled over, my mom and her three friends started to panic. One of them even started to cry. My mom is a rather collected person and had the sense to at least look behind her. She saw that there were two cops. One walked over to the car and the other stayed in the police cruiser. She tries to find out who the man is, but the light obscures his face. He walks over slowly and leans over to speak to the girls through their open window. My mom sighs in relief as she recognizes him. She knew him as Mr. Nelson, a big man in his 40s who went to her church. In her drunk state, she's hoping that they might be able to get out of this with only a warning. Hell, maybe he might agree to not tell her parents. Mr. Nelson looks right at my mom. "Having a good night, are we, Miss Kelvin?" he asks her. My mom smiles, both nervous and embarrassed. "Sorry, Mr. Nelson, we must have been distracting the driver too much." My mom had gotten used to lying by this point and was already pretty good at it, but Mr. Nelson looked unconvinced. He asks for the standard driver license and registration, and then asks them all to step out of the vehicle and walks back to his cruiser. "Oh no," my mom's friend whispers to her. "We're going to get tested." My mom calms him down and they step out of the car. The cops ask him to do some pretty basic stuff at first, mostly stuff that you would expect from a cop trying to determine if you were drunk. Mr. Nelson and his partner, some guy that my mom didn't recognize, told the girls to stand over by their car, putting a fair amount of distance between the two groups. When my mom looks back at them, Mr. Nelson had the faintest of smiles on his face. "Okay, ladies," he says, "there's two things that could happen." Mr. Nelson turns to his partner, and they both smile mischievously at one another. "We could take you home and tell your parents everything. We could do that, or..." His smile gets bigger. "You could do something for us." A chill runs down my mom's back. She did not like the way he said that at all. "What kind of things?" one of her friends asks. Mr. Nelson's smile gets bigger. It's not an evil or sadistic smile, she says. She said that it looked more like a smug satisfaction. I'm thinking that we might have to conduct a strip search. My mom's blood went cold. Everything goes silent for a second, except for the smug smiles on their faces, and the low bit of laughter that came from the other officer. She couldn't believe what she was hearing. The Mr. Nelson that she'd known for years, who she saw every week, whose children went to school with her, was trying to force her 16-year-old self and friends to strip down in front of him. What? Was all my mom could muster. Mr. Nelson looked at her, a hungry look on his face. Come on, this doesn't have to end badly. Just show us some skin and we can forget this ever happened. My mom and her friends refused at first. There was no way in hell that they would do that, no matter how much trouble it would get them in. But Mr. Nelson's face darkened. I don't think you understand, he growled. Now, how about you be nice and friendly and do it? His voice terrified them. His manner of tone and his significantly more aggressive approach made my mother go white with terror. Worried as to what they might do if they refused, my mom and her friends obeyed. They stripped down completely nude and just stood there. The cops laughed and smiled like smug assholes. They were clearly getting a kick out of this. My mother won't talk about what they did, and for the life of me, I really don't want to know. But what I do know is that eventually the cops had all the girls lean against their car. It was here that she managed to get time to communicate with her friends. One of them was crying hard, and she nearly got caught trying to get her attention. They agreed that on three, they would all sprint into the cornfield to their right, hide in there, and try and escape them. And they did. They managed to get far into the cornfield. Mr. Nelson tried grabbing at one of her friends, but she avoided him. The cops didn't even try to pursue them into the cornfield. They just got right back in their car and drove like madmen. They waited for a full 10 minutes, making sure that the cops weren't intending on coming back. They got back to their car, dressed in their clothes, and went straight home. In the next few days, Mr. Nelson never said anything to anyone about pulling them over, and they never reported what happened. If they ever did, Mr. Nelson would just say that they were drunk. Mr. Nelson was an upstanding figure in the community, and no one would have believed the girls. This was the 80s, and nothing would ever have happened or changed. If anything, it would have just made the girls' lives hell. Every now and then at church, she would find Mr. Nelson, and he would flash her that smug smile and wink at her.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You never know what's behind, even the most upstanding of people, that's for sure. To Mr. Nelson, I hope you're rotting somewhere. Two summers ago, on my way from an out-of-town day trip for my son's birthday party, we went to a water park and decided to go to dinner in this really small town after getting slightly lost due to Google Maps' crappy directions. After dinner, we noticed across the street that there was a county fair, so we checked it out for fun. It was getting dark and the fair was nearly over, but we caught a tractor pull that was about to begin. We'd never been to one of those, so we thought it might be a fun way to top off the birthday trip. We sat on the bleachers and watched for a while. There were a lot of families there watching, and also a lot of drunk people as well. I didn't think anything of it. I had my 16-year-old son with me and a good friend of mine who was a strong guy, so I felt safe. We decided to leave the fair before the event was over, so as not to be on the road at night with the drunks. We walked back to the restaurant, which was now closed, and we got into my car and set off for home. Backtracking using Google Maps directions, we got on the road that I recognized would get us back home. I noticed that as soon as we pulled out of the restaurant, there was a car behind me. the only other car on the road, as most of the town inhabitants were most likely at the fair or at home. The car followed us onto the road we took to get home, which I found odd because it was a desolate backhill road with a wooded area on either side. I thought maybe they too were from out of town and were using the same cut across to get to the interstate, as it was summer and many people road trip. I still felt uneasy about it, but I decided to just get off this road and onto the interstate as soon as possible. As we were driving on this hilly back road, it was fully dark outside, and I kept it easy for fear of a deer running out in front of us. The car stayed right behind me, so I slowed way down, hoping he would just be annoyed enough to pass me for going too slow. But instead, he drove right up on my ass, tailgating me. I could see that it was only one person in the car, and the windows were tinted. I dared to speed up, wanting to get on a main road or interstate as soon as I could. He stayed right behind me, going as fast or as slow as I was, not bothering to get off my bumper. I knew without a doubt we were being harassed now. I was getting scared. I mean, I had my son in the back seat, and it was his birthday. This was unfair, and I kicked myself for going to the tractor pull. Of course, I could not have predicted this craziness. After what seemed like ages, we got onto the interstate. I had hoped it was just some local jerk who wanted to scare some city folks, but I somehow knew it was not that simple. As I feared, he followed us onto the interstate. Even on the highway, he tailgated us. I slowed down initially, hoping in futility that he'd pass us. No luck. I sped way up. He caught up and stayed too close. Unfortunately, the interstate was quiet on our side, so I had no choice but to keep going. My friend was getting very angry and ready to fight if necessary, but I wanted no part of meeting this guy face to face, especially with my birthday boy in the back seat. I just kept going and prayed not to get a flat tire. At one point, I got scared enough to lay on the horn while driving, hoping the noise would dissuade him. It actually worked. He pulled over onto the shoulder and I saw his headlights turn off. I was relieved at first, but we found it odd that he killed the lights. After that, we sped up and I was flying for home. The sooner the better. About 15 minutes passed in blissful uneventfulness. We talked about how scary that whole ordeal was and eventually started feeling relieved to put it all behind us. Literally. Literally, we were about 25 minutes from home and there were a couple of vehicles here and there which made us feel less alone on the road. At one point when the cars thinned out and we were once again alone on the road completely, something happened that I could not believe. Right next to us and slightly behind us, headlights, bright, burst on. He had been following us that whole time with his lights off, staying carefully behind us and waiting for his chance to scare and surprise us. I almost started crying, but at this point I was too angry. This guy had been following us for an hour now. Far ahead of us, I saw the taillights of a semi. I sped up quickly, with the stranger in the car next to me trying to pace us from the fast lane. I think he realized that I was trying to catch up with the semi, so for the first time in this insane chase, he did something truly dangerous and swerved at my rear panel, a pit maneuver, trying to push us off the road. I sped ahead and missed him clipping me by inches. I finally reached the semi driver and got close, hugging the back of his truck as much as I dared, and leaving no room for this jerk to cut me off. We went this way for a little while. Finally, and I truly believe this semi-truck driver knew something was wrong, because after so long of seeing this crazy driver swerving at me and trying to get in front of me, as I would not let him over, the semi-driver did something I will forever appreciate him for. He swerved over onto the fast lane and dangerously cut off the stranger's car, and then tapped his brakes. I took it as my cue to speed ahead from the slow lane and try to lose this creep. I sped up to probably 90. My hometown was just straight ahead, so I took a sharp left turn onto a back street that led to a main road and stopped in a busy, well-lit gas station. Luckily, there was a cop there. My friend got out and explained the whole situation to the officer, and he called for other cars to search for this guy. We left the gas station after calling a friend to follow me to a parking lot, where I stowed my car overnight because I did not want the guy to possibly find my house by recognizing the car. I washed my back for quite some time after that, and I always notice that make and model of car in white if I see it on the streets. Thank goodness we got away safely. Now, the most bothersome thing about this story is that the small town where this took place happens to be the hometown of one of the biggest mental health asylums in the Midwest. This thought has kept me awake more than once, and I still check the papers for stories or escapees. This occurred in 2009. I was 22 years old, and I was leaving my home state of California to head east for my corrections job. I was driving down the loneliest highway portion of the route, and it was around 3 a.m. on a Sunday. They don't call it the loneliest highway for nothing. I hadn't seen another soul for at least a half hour. I was getting sleepy, but I wasn't tired enough to pull over and take a nap. Suddenly, I saw a broken down car on the side of the highway. I slowed down and saw a woman standing next to the car. So I approached this woman with caution, rolling down my window just a sliver. Something about her wasn't right. I couldn't put my finger on it then, but I know now it was my subconscious screaming red flag, red flag. I asked her if she needed me to call a tow truck or AAA for her, and she immediately tried to open my door. I explained to her I didn't feel comfortable by letting her in, but I'd wait until a tow truck came. She immediately got this look of rage on her face and started berating me. "You're a big man. I mean, what am I going to do?" She was calling me cruel for not letting her in. This is where I messed up, and I can see this now 10 years later. I begrudgingly unlocked my door, figuring that she was right. I mean, she was 5'2", and I'm over 6 feet, and I have 100 pounds on her easily. She looked to be about 90 pounds or so. She slips in, and I asked her who I can call. This was 10 years ago, like I said, so I had a little BlackBerry slide, I think, at the time. She starts telling me that she'd just prefer if I'd give her a ride to the next town. Now I'm starting to realize I'd done messed up because she's avoiding eye contact and she's fumbling in her purse. When I mention calling for help, she starts getting aggressive, demanding I take her to the next town. I'm so busy trying to unfuck this situation that I miss a man who either was hiding in or near her car. It wasn't until he was almost to my driver's side door that I managed to catch him in my mirror. Fight or flight kicked in overdrive, and I put my car in drive, and I sped off as the fucker was reaching for my car door. When I started driving, I heard a pinging noise, and then my mirror exploding. He was shooting at me. The adrenaline alone had me doing near 90, and by this time, homegirl realized in whatever drug-induced state she was in that her little plan was futile. She started hitting me, telling me to stop and to let her out. When I reached enough of a distance, I did just that. I pulled over and demanded she got the hell out. She started going for the oversized purse she had, but I had enough. I was literally shaking with adrenaline, so I reached over, opened the door, and pretty much shoved her out. I tried grabbing for her purse, but she managed to hold on to it, not before dumping half of what was in there on my passenger seat. I sped off with my door still open. I waited till I got a good distance from her, and I slammed it shut and locked it. I clenched the wheel and I drove. It wasn't until later that morning I pulled into a Denny's did I realize how close I was to pretty much dying. I had a good cry for a minute, and then I realized a bunch of her things spilled onto my passenger seat.
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
Two ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's! Ba-da-ba-ba-ba!
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Most of it was nasty, wadded-up napkins and a few tubes of lipstick and drug paraphernalia. I'd considered calling the cops or finding a highway patrol officer, but I did do something stupid. I tossed all of her things that had fallen into a trash bag and I threw them away. At the time, I had the dream of becoming a cop, and I knew if I got caught with drug paraphernalia, that would probably be impossible. I didn't think they would believe me that the drug paraphernalia wasn't mine. I noticed a cop at the gas station across from the Denny's, and I told him what happened. He pretty much berated me for pulling over and then letting her in. He did say he'd look into it, but I doubt he did. I was so shaken that I pretty much picked at my pancakes and then left to continue on my way. I never did replace that mirror. I also ended up selling my car. To this day, 10 years later, I hesitate to stop and help stranded motorists.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.